Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with George Dodd. How are you, George?
I'm sniffing away happily. Look at that. I mean, what a fantastic wine show. I mean, all these fantastic millions and millions of aromas. And yet, given time, you know, you and I could actually learn to distinguish between all of them, but we need the time.
In the wine or walking around the show?
Well, both.
Yeah, you said you can smell people. Is that necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, I think, sometimes, especially...
Oh, the right combination is magical. The right wine, the right person. Things happen.
Sure. What I want to talk about today is talking a wee bit more specifically about aromas in wine. One of the things that I've noticed in wine development is that as grapes ripen, the flavors change or the aroma changes. And Sauvignon Blanc is a very good example because when you taste a grape, say a Pinot Noir, you don't necessarily get the same flavors in a grape because the fermentation changes the aromas and all that sort of stuff. So we can talk a wee bit about that. But Sauvignon Blanc, as it ripens, it goes through quite distinct aroma phases. It starts out quite grassy green and goes through maybe a grapefruity type aroma, and then finally getting blackcurrant bud type aroma right through to passion fruit type aromas. And then sometimes they even get quite canned right at the very extreme. Yeah. But do you want to comment about that? And I know you're desperate to talk about asparagus
Well, it just so happens I've done, because our wine aroma nosing kit, training kit, is making its debut here, I've done two experiments in two well-known London restaurants, which I'll be nameless. And in each I've ordered a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc at £100, which is a decent price for wine. So you'd expect a very rich...
Not New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc,
a rich flavour profile. And in each case, the crucial asparagus... A good Sauvignon Blanc should be asparagus, currant leaf, which is black currant-y, tomcat spray kind of smell, not too much. It should be unusually gooseberry. In fact, it's the only wine which has a very distinct gooseberry smell.
Well, people say that, but I've got a gooseberry bush at the end of my garden, and it doesn't smell like that.
I know, actually, a goose gob in your mouth, smelling a gooseberry, not the actual bush, an actual gooseberry. And the other notes which you've mentioned already is cut grass. And what people often misleadingly refer to as a cat pee, which isn't. It's actually the pheromone of a tomcat. That's a tomcat marking his territory. Which actually, if you dilute it down, smells like black currant. But in both those restaurants, the Sauvignon Blanc really didn't have a touch of asparagus. And asparagus at a low level gives a lovely warmth. Here we are using a touch description for an aroma. We're stuck with that kind of, that's all we can do. And I called the sommeliers across, and we had very interesting discussions about that wine. And in both cases, those sommeliers didn't really realize that a good Sauvignon Blanc should have a very distinct and identifiable asparagus note.
Well, that's, you know, if you go to Sancerre, you will not get an asparagus note in any of those wines.
Yeah.
So are you talking about New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, or... Because depending on where...
Well, I don't want to give too much away. I don't want to identify the restaurants. But these were two celebrated Sauvignon Blancs. One was from Australia, from a famous Murray River winery.
Yep.
The other one was a French Sauvignon Blanc.
That raises a point, because I don't think all Sauvignon Blancs, or wines in general, don't always have the same flavour profile.
Correct. Yeah, but that's the charm of wine. The answer is, these are generic descriptions.
Yeah.
But, of course, they'll vary with... This is where the actual production of the grape in the ground, there will be the influences. But, for example, a Cabernet Sauvignon is still very distinctive. The reason you could distinguish it from a Merlot or the Pinot Noir is the actual aroma individual notes there are defining. There's absolutely no doubt about that.
I don't know about that. I tend to disagree. I've seen Sauvignon Blancs from all over the world that have very distinctive, different aroma profiles.
Yeah, this is where, incidentally, I'm a smell expert, not a wine expert, so I have to defer to your greater knowledge of wine. I give wine aroma master classes, and I don't pretend to be a wine expert. My expertise is in smell, and I help people start on the great journey, one of the greatest exploration journeys of their life, as they learn to tune into the smells and the wines. And you obviously are much more expert in wine than I am.
Well, I drink a bit.
I just come back, incidentally, from Patagonia.
Oh, yeah. Yes. They're making wine down there.
I had fantastic in Chile. I had one of the Chilean stand here actually boasts that they make the best Cabernet Sauvignon in the world. And I had fantastic Cabernet Sauvignon with a silky black currant note, which was, it was angelic.
Really?
Yes, it's so smooth. But just to actually amplify the comment about the one at a Carmen Reserva in Patagonia in the mountains, and I brought a bottle back, but of course I was on holiday and relaxed, and I enjoy the wine much more in Chile. When I opened a bottle in Scotland, it was very pleasant, but didn't have quite the charm it had in Chile.
Yeah, a lot of people say that. Do you know why that would be?
I think it's the mood we're in when we're drinking a wine influences our expectations in ways.
Yeah, you did but say it, a couple of weeks ago that the very, smell and...
It's very, you know, yeah, that's right. It's very striking. I mean, I don't think anybody ever really studied it. But when you're on holiday, you know, light, sunshine seems to be brighter. Everything seems to be more relaxed anyway.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay, let's get back to these aromas and wines. Do you think that grapes should have, like, people talk about Cabernet Sauvignon having a blackcurrant backbone or something like that, but they don't always have blackcurrant backbones. As a smelling person, do you think that all wine should smell similar? You know, because that's part of the charm of wine.
I wouldn't presume to lay down any rules about wine. All I do is help train people's noses so they will be more receptive. For example, if you want to become a wine master and you're blind tasting and you've got black glasses and you can't see the color, you don't know what's happening. It is your sense of smell and your sense of taste which is really doing the work. Mm-hmm. And so Cabernet Sauvignons will vary from very little black currant across to such an astonishing level that it actually can become offensive.
Yep.
Because not everybody likes it. And the black currant-y note, which incidentally has a year ago, for the first time ever, a tomcat black currant-y smell has actually been identified in human sweat. For the first time ever.
Yep.
Which means the deodorant companies have been missing the target anyway. They've been aiming at other smelly molecules. But I don't know if you've ever noticed, young children often hate black currant flavors, which they'll accept as adults. As their sense of your eyes get weaker with age. You and I wear glasses. Your ears get weaker with age. And your sense of smell gets weaker with age.
Okay.
You see this particularly with vintage Pinot Noirs. You think of an old colonel or an old person. Okay, the more affluent, they can afford a good vintage wine.
Yep.
But the very heavy animal notes, farmyard notes,
yep.
They are often offensive for younger noses. But as your sense of smell gets weaker, by the time you reach your 60s, your sensitivity is now matched to the level of that smell in the molecule. In the wine books I read, it's very rarely commented that this change of sensitivity with age. I haven't seen anybody comment on that, but that's actually very marked, and it happens spectacularly with black currant.
And what age?
Well, it would be highly individual.
Yeah, yeah.
For example...
No, but like, would a 20-year-old be significantly different to a 30-year-old, significantly different to a 50-year-old?
Yeah, I know you're looking for simple answers, and I'd love to give you a simple answer.
I'm after a bite-sized chunk, please.
Sure, well, 25 years ago, my research group wrote up what was then the biggest study on how the sense of smell ate. We actually wrote it up as a book, and there's enormous variation. For example, we had 70-year-olds who could outperform 20-year-olds. There's so much variation. The trend is weakening towards age, but there's so much individual variation you can't actually specify. Part of it is, incidentally, is think of your sense of smell as a muscle. You know the rule for muscles in running, use it or lose it.
Yep.
And if you don't actively use your sense of smell, your brain isn't responding, you're not tuning up your brain, so your brain, it'll decay at a much faster rate.
You mentioned, we wanted to go before we got in here, about Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's?
Oh, Alzheimer's, yes.
You know, as you're getting older, you lose smell, and then you were saying that some people actually go to the doctor and say their food tastes funny.
Sure, our company is the world's first company dedicated to making what we call entertaining and educational aroma kits. And Alzheimer's is one of the great diseases of our time. And the bad news is there's no easy way. By the time you diagnose it, it's very difficult to do anything with it. So there's a great need to identify people before they actually really acquire the disease. And the first sign is typically a man or woman suddenly going to a doctor, and they typically say, "Me food tastes funny," or "I can't taste me food." And doctors get no training in the scent of smell, and they probably give them an antidepressant drug or something. Whereas we are developing a kit so doctors can, you know, evaluate your eyesight, and they can evaluate your ears. They have no idea what to do with smell. But if we could actually pick up early signs of Alzheimer's through smell, the smell nerve is the first to go. Do you remember the first program I mentioned? You actually smell with your brain.
Yep.
And the sniffer cells stick out into the air.
Yep.
Now, they're the most delicate, brain cells are the most delicate cells in our body. And because they're exposed to air, they get assaulted by all the air pollution. And they die very quickly. And in fact, a remarkable fact about those cells is all your sniffer cells only last about a month.
Okay.
And they're continually replaced throughout your life, which is magical, because the, you know, a fine Merlot as you experience at 20 is still a Merlot when you're 70, and yet that part of the brain has completely changed many times. So in Alzheimer's, possibly because of some kind of pollution, the scent of smell goes first. And the good news is there are drugs now which can slow down Alzheimer's and preserve a high quality of life.
Yep.
So if we could, the emphasis is coming on to very early diagnosis. About 2 months ago, I was at the latest big international conference on Alzheimer's disease in Geneva, and this idea was very well received. And it's potentially very, very important.
Yeah, one of the other things about smells, or at least people tasting wine.
In a sense, you do know one of the advantages, of course, of having Alzheimer's disease.
No?
Oh, you sleep with a different woman every night.
Just on, you're talking about a month for your sense of smell to be replaced. What about smokers? Because they often can't smell as much. And I hear people who smoke and taste wine.
Yeah.
And they say, you know, you just get used to the smell. Do you actually taste less or smell less if you smoke?
The explanation there is very simple. Most cigarette smoke or smoke of any kind is very irritating. And that the nose responds by simply producing a lot of mucus to coat the surfaces and stop the smoke getting up. So you're getting less smelly molecules up into your nose. But, of course, smokers will compensate for that by taking bigger sniffs. So you learn a compensation strategy.
So a smoker will taste a wine similar to a non-smoker?
I mean, until very recently, if you look at the classic French perfumes, for example, most of those perfumers smoked, and they still created excellent perfumes. So the answer is you can compensate. But when people stop smoking,
they say they get a lot
more
flavor.
There's a dramatic increase in their sensitivity because the body, the nose stops producing the mucus, the airways are clear, and a lot more smelly molecules are leaping onto the brain.
Okay.
And, of course, you'd actually have to recalibrate. If you had spent your 10 years as a smoking expert on wine and you suddenly stop smoking, you've got to kind of recalibrate yourself because you suddenly become more sensitive. But in practice, you just do it.
What about people who... Some people get really into old wines. You know, I've got friends who just love wines that don't smell of any fruit. They just like these nasty, old, smelly things.
Sure.
Is there anything weird going on with vintage wines?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Do you happen to know what the word pheromone means?
It's a... Well, I know it from the moth pheromones and all that are used to attract moths.
Yep.
And they're like sexual pheromones. There are all sorts of pheromones produced by the body.
Yeah. Well, do you know that humans have pheromones?
Yep. In fact, I know perfumers have been trying to find a sexual pheromone to make the scent that attracts the opposite.
No, in fact, I mean, human pheromones is now a scientifically very respectable area which I work in. But if you take a vintage Pinot Noir and look at the aroma, and a non-vintage year that works with Cabernet Sauvignon too, the vintage years contain at least one human pheromone in the aroma profile. And I found today, walking around the wine exhibition...
When you say vintage years, you mean top quality vintages?
Top quality vintages versus...
Average.
The really best wines have a human pheromone in the aroma profile.
And people like it because of that smell?
Well, they would pick it up consciously. A human pheromone actually gives you... lots of experiments now have been done. If we anoint you with some appropriate pheromone mixture and let you go into a party and then grab people to ask their opinion of you, they will say you are smiler, smilier and warmer, and you have a charisma about you. They mightn't find you sexually attractive, because we actually have rules about that. We have expectations of social behavior. But people would find you more charming and warmer and nicer.
Really?
And you're reacting to that unconsciously.
Can you make me a perfume like that?
Of course.
I might have a chat to you afterwards.
Incidentally, we have this Christmas, we're bringing out, 2 years ago, I created the world's first whiskey-inspired perfume, which is going on the market this Christmas. But it picks up all the notes of many, many whiskies. 2 years ago, a company in the Napa Valley produced a wine-inspired perfume, and we have a wine-inspired. Again, it doesn't smell like wine, but we pick up the green notes. For example, the cassis note, the Cabernet Sauvignon note, that's the main note in the... Do you know the celebrated perfume Poison?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, very heavy. That's a very blackcurrant-based note. So we take many of the notes from many famous wines and combine them together to get a really intriguing perfume.
Just getting back to our noses, we talked ages ago about different, effectively, the olfactory lobe is part of the brain, it's hardwired, and we've spoken about different receptors, and we've talked about black spots in people's noses as well. How common are black spots, and are there particular smells that many people have a black spot for, particularly with relation to wines?
Sure, the answer really is quite alarming, in fact, because if you take, let's liken this to color blindness, okay? About 1-2% of the population are colorblind. A very serious defect. You can't become a pilot, for example.
Yep.
But it's relatively 98% of us are normal. When it comes to a sense of smell, nobody has a perfect sense. Do you remember I talked about having 1,000 receptors? That means at least 1,000 genes. So everybody has multiple imperfections. And these days, when you train as a perfumer, in the first 6 months, your imperfections will be systematically identified. But all of us have many imperfections, but few people get the chance to explore that. So, for example, you know the typical dispute in you're out having a fine wine, lovely meal with your friends, and somebody's saying, this is the best, you know, Merlot they've ever had, and somebody says, well, it's not. That dispute may be biological. If you can smell an extra molecule and I can't, you can make an extra discrimination, which biologically I'm simply incapable of, no matter how hard I try. So there's a very profound genetic biological basis to these perceptions. And none of us have a perfect nose. And in many ways, I find this is very charming. This is the human condition. This is why there'll be eternal wrangles about the merits of fine wines, because in any one jury, there are going to be remarkable differences. And the other take-home lesson is one nose is not a nose. No one wine expert or smell expert is capable of making a general judgment for everybody.
Yeah, that's something you need to talk to some people in the US about, that, because there's one wine critic who does that.
Yes, but there is, in both the whiskey world and the wine world, there is the cult of the guru. But no one knows, is biologically capable of that trick. And there are some extreme cases where people absolutely simply cannot smell. For example, do you like the smell of truffles? Do you like truffles?
I don't dislike it. It's not my favorite smell by any stretch, though.
Okay. Now, I know what you're sensitive to, and I know, whereas some people adore truffles, and that's there's one single molecule which is responsible for the flavor, and there's a huge difference in sensitivity. Some people lack the gene and can't get the smell at all. Other people have two copies of the gene. They find the damn thing they're so sensitive that they find it offensive. Incidentally, the smell of truffles contains a human pheromone.
So we should like it.
Well, the logic of eating truffles and if you look at the social history of wine and fine gourmet foods in Europe, it's only the kings and emperors who could afford to have very vintage wines and things like truffles. And the biological logic of that is they're temporarily increasing their pheromone profile.
That's what they think is happening.
Oh, well, no, that's it. That actually happens. If you eat a plate of truffles, the human pheromone on truffles, which also occurs in Pinot Noir and wine, is a sign of an alpha male. Alpha
really?
Human males produce more of that smell than other males.
So I should be drinking more
You should be
old Pinot.
You should be buying the most expensive old Pinot Noir your wallet can afford, and you should eat a plate of truffles every night.
Well, can I just use pheromones from you?
Well, we'll make a private arrangement afterwards. Yes, the same genuine. But incidentally, do you know much a plate of truffles costs?
A lot, usually. Well, it depends if it's the black truffles or there's lots of different types.
The white Perigord ones, yes. The answer is it's cheaper to eat a plate of gold.
Yeah, that's wet.
Stick to the Pinot Noir, yes. But above all else, what I want to emphasize is great individuality. People, it's very easy to be intimidated by the great wine writers and the great gurus.
Yep.
But the answer is, we all of us have your sense of smell. If I took you to my laboratory and we spent a week testing with molecule after molecule after molecule, and we compared our profiles, we would turn out the more molecules we smell, the greater the differences will be, and that affects the way we will. Then we go and do wine evaluations. That individual variation, a mixture of nature and nurture, will influence our judgments on wines.
Okay, I'm going to stop it here. Thanks very much, George.
Okay.
Cheers.